Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Hello everybody, it's me, Roscoe, and welcome to the latest Kings of Anglia Itches Town podcast, sponsored by Stardust Spirits. Use the code KOA and you get 20% off your next order. And we are back after the international break, which is always boring. 17 days since the last Town game. Obviously, we'll record a podcast since then. The KOA Live 2 at the Barsonage, which was fantastic. Obviously, we've had other little podcasts here and there. AJ and Heathy did one the other week. But we're back and I'm in the hot seat. And I'm fresh off watching the wrestling, WWE Raw in London at the O2. That was good. But I'm joined tonight, today, this morning, this afternoon, whatever day it is, whatever it is, with Stuart Watson and Alex Jones. Stu, come and save me. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm very keen to hear more about your wrestling experience. I was, was never really into it as a kid, bar playing on your computer game with Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and all those guys. Talk me through it. Will I have known any of the people there last
John
night?
Cena? Do you know John Cena? You know, one you can't see me? Yeah, that jazz. He's a heel now. He's a bad guy. Anybody else you would know? Cody Rhodes? Do you know Cody Rhodes? Dusty Rhodes' son?
Dusty Rhodes' son?
Yeah.
Talk me through Dusty.
He's at like the American Dream. He's a...
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, this is just a pointless conversation, Stu. Let's bring AJ in. He knows a little bit. My friend, how are you?
No. Oh, that was brilliant. I couldn't clock if Stu knew that you meant Dusty Rhodes' son, or if the guy was called Dusty Rhodes' son. That's really what it sounded like in that moment.
That's what I thought you said, yeah.
Oh, you thought it was Dusty Rhodes' son. No. Yeah, watching Stu trying to process some of those. Did you have Randy Orton there last night?
No, unfortunately not. He's a SmackDown boy. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I assume Stu might have heard of Randy Orton potentially.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, yeah. So we've got a few like that. When I was a kid, I was really big into it. So I definitely have probably a slightly stronger knowledge of it. Talk to us a bit more then. What was the main highlights? What was the best matches you saw? Things like that.
Yeah, it was a good night. It was about 3 hours long. There was like a main event, like they record like a where it's sort of like, you know, the smaller stars perform before the main show, because obviously it's Raw on Netflix. So you could have maybe seen me in the cheap seats. They did pan up, and I think they panned to some celebrities. And I know Heathy put in our group chat saying, "They must have missed you, Ross." I was like, I know, I didn't get the memo. But no, it was a good night. And I think the favourite bit was actually the dark match at the end. So when the whole show's done, they always have like a little thing to end the show for the people there. And CM Punk is obviously a big star in WWE, obviously returned a few years ago after 10 years away. And he had a wrestling match with Ludwig Kaiser, who is German. So obviously he got some boos, because obviously English Germans, we don't like him, do we? But CM Punk, obviously a big star, and he obviously won the match. And then at the end, he sang. He basically played out a bit of Queen. He mentioned like the Beatles, Oasis, and Rolling Stones, and all that sort of stuff. But he said like the favourite sort of band in the UK has got to be Queen. And he played out Fat Bottom Girls, which was a good little song to end. But really good night. Shout out to Kieran Stanley. Good old K-Dog, not Kieran McKenna. But Kieran Stanley was there with me and it was a really good night. Although I got in very late, 3 a.m. because of the bloody A12 was closed. And getting out to London was not fun. It was not fun. Obviously, I wasn't driving. A late night. But yeah, hope not. Yeah, April Fool's and all that. But yeah, it was a good night. I'm not a big WWE fan as I used to be. But do you know what? I've brought a bit of fandom back into me. Just watching it live, watching the entrances. Rhea Ripley was there as well, the Aussie, who's one of the female wrestlers. She was really good as well. A good night all over. You are still tuned into an Itchy Town podcast later, Joe, don't worry. But that's just me having a little moment. But yeah, really good, because it's been 6 years since WWE Raw has been in London, so that was really good. And they've just finished their European tour, and we're on the road to WrestleMania. But I can see Stu's getting bored. So what you been up to, Stu?
I'm enjoying wrestling chat. It's good. Did anyone get hit with a chair? Did anyone jump off a ladder?
No. That's actually a bit disappointed. They did shout during CM Punk's dark match. There was like shout for tables, and there was a lot of wankers. Obviously, us Brits, we're calling different wrestlers wankers, and obviously, just different phrases as we all do. I didn't have a banner. There was plenty of banners, and I have to admit, I shouldn't say this, controversial, but I was seeing a lot of grown men with wrestling belts, and I was like, that's going a bit too far. I don't mind kids wearing it, but you're a grown man wearing a wrestling belt.
So damn real to me.
Yeah, but wearing a wrestling belt, I don't know. And there was a guy, like a few rows down, I was saying this to AJ in the green room, there was a guy with an iPad recording the whole thing. And I literally went over to him and just tapped on his shoulder. I went, mate, do you know it's on Netflix? You can watch it back when you get home. But I don't know. People obviously record the moment, but he was recording the whole thing, because I quickly looked over and it had like 30 minutes recording. I was like, what are you doing, mate? Just watch the show. But anyway, it was a great night, and a bit of Mexican as well, Mexican food, pre-wrestling. That was nice. But yeah, let me know, buddy. Anybody listen to this right now, if you went to WWE Raw, and hope you enjoyed it. So, but yeah.
Do you think K-Dog did? Like you said, do you think Kieran McKenna might have been there?
Maybe.
Well, who would Kieran McKenna's favourite WWE superstar be?
Oh, someone who's like really Gunther, probably, because Gunther is like he's Austrian, but he's like proper like he's a good wrestler.
I mean, really Kieran likes Austria, though.
So yeah, that's
we end up there every year, then. Don't we? So perfect. Yeah, there you go. Like that works off.
Kieran's similar age to me, so I reckon his era of wrestling would have been Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Legions of Doom. Do you remember them? Yeah. They had like big spiky shoulder pad things.
Maybe Brett Pittman. No, Brett Pittman. That's a bit of a
Brett Pittman. Brett the Pittman Hart.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But Brett Hart, maybe.
We're going to be running out of questions for Kieran soon, so maybe if things get Friday really desperate, I'll chuck it in.
Three Wolves.
Yeah, I like that. But pretty much. But boys, football is back, though, after the international break. Quick one for you. What have you been up to, Stu? You obviously had a little time away to recharge your batteries, ready for this running?
Yeah, I had a few days off. Seemed like a good time to do so. When's the last time we've gone 17 games without a football match for Ipswich Town? Are we going back to COVID time? Certainly within a season. I know we had a game called off last year. Alex mentioned about the Rotherham call off came off the back of an international break, didn't it? So that was a decent break. But yeah, feels very rare to have gone this long without a game, and for it to happen off the back of the nature of the performance and defeat to Nottingham Forest was the mood feels a little bit sort of flat at the moment, and obviously we'll wait and see with bated breath how Wolves get on against West Ham tonight, and whether that adds to the feeling going into Bournemouth tomorrow night. But look, there's still, as Kieran McKenna points out, just under a quarter of a Premier League season left, and we've got to try and enjoy it as much as we can, despite the table being what it is. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back to some football and going down to the South Coast tomorrow.
Indeed, bring it on. AJ, have you been watching any football during this? Obviously, on TV, but have you gone to any games? I know you love your football.
No, weirdly not, which is bizarre. Most of my football has been sat watching England under 21s play or something like that in the last couple of weeks, but nothing live, which is good, because watching Cambridge, if I ever go to do that, is a bit of a chore. They're home to Wrexham tonight, and I've kind of been half thinking about going, and I don't know if I can bring myself to do it at the moment. Wow, that's such a sad thing to say. But yeah, I mean, the international break, said it was one of those where I don't mind international breaks. Essentially, everyone paints it as I like them. I essentially just don't dislike them as much as everyone else, because it's just, there's still football, there's something a bit fresh. This one dragged on a bit, didn't it? This one was a bit hard with those few extra days going into the weekend and trying to think of some bits to write and stuff like that. It was never that easy, but There's some nice bits in there as well. I like the Towns England the 21 trio all scoring, which is really good. Amari scored, Jaden Philogene scored, Liam Delap scored. Amari got that weird red card as well. But I'll mention my other international break highlight as well. Julio Enciso's goal. First time I've mentioned this on a pod. His strike against Colombia. Absolute thunder bastard. Brilliant strike. And he had fun kind of rubbing salt in the wounds because his girlfriend's Colombian. And he dedicated the goal to her after he scored it as well, which I quite liked. A little bit tongue-in-cheek, which suits him quite well. But yeah, glad to be back to club football.
I think a thunder bee, and I'm gonna call it that because we're gonna limit the bad words here. I think that needs to be laces. I think this is more of a curler, wasn't it? This was instepped and it bent outside of the post.
It had
was one
the power.
Of those. Yeah, true. I'm gonna say it's borderline.
Yeah, I will accept borderline. I don't think it's a massive breach of terminology. To call it that. It was the first thing that came to my mind, to be honest.
I'm not massively offended by it, Alex. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Fair enough. I think that, yeah, reasonable debate and conversation about
it. But yeah, it was a beauty, wasn't it? It starts outside the post if you watch it directly from behind, and it curls right in the postage stamp of the upper 90, as our American friends would call it. Lovely goal. Bit of that in Ipswich Town colours, please, Julio.
Yes. Did you watch it live yet, AJ, like at 2 a.m. in the morning?
At 2 a.m.? No, I did not. I woke up and saw it. I had a few messages from people who follow Paraguay internationally who were very excited that it was in Enciso. He's a bit of a superstar over there as well, which is really nice. Similar, I mean, maybe kind of a level up from Sarmiento, because Sarmiento was always adored by kind of Ecuador fans. And I think if you're playing in England, you naturally have a bit of a higher profile. Happy Sarmiento Day to those who celebrate, by the way. And yeah, with Enciso, I think because he kind of is like the golden boy in the future of Paraguay, like they love him. And there were quite a few Ipswich shirts, I think, around when they were playing their first game in Asuncion, which they won. And yeah, but did I watch it? Absolutely not. Watched some of the games over that break, but I absolutely was not staying up to watch Copa America qualifiers at 2 a.m.
Fair play. A bit of an unrelated note, back to the wrestling quickly. Another thing from last night, basically Bianca Belair, who's one of the female wrestlers, she was a special guest referee for one of the matches. And obviously a standard British thing, we called her the referee's a wanker, which was a bit of fun. But yeah, but anyway, back to the football, boys. Back to your chat, Stu, with Mark Ashton, who I think you'd love a little bit of wrestling money. He loves the razzmatazz of it, I'm sure. But yeah, a nice little sit down with him, talk about all things Town, obviously the women's team as well. Quickly highlight some of the moments from it, my friend.
Yeah, nice to have a proper sit down chat with Mark. First time I've done so since the day after promotion, when I recorded a video with Mark. So it's been a little while. Primarily went into try and highlight the women's game leading up to that and get some bums on seats for that, which obviously, you know, another fantastic attendance. I know you guys have spoken about that as an occasion. And obviously then it provided an opportunity to talk about the bigger picture of the men's team, the infrastructure projects, everything going on. Difficult sort of time to, you know, as is the case with Kieran at the moment, to kind of have the proper debrief of the season. I think, you know, realistically we all know which way this is headed at the moment, but until it's mathematically impossible, I think everyone has to say the right things. But you know, once again the word was brutal in terms of asking how this Premier League season has been. And you know, we discussed if things could have been done differently, should have been done differently. Lessons have been learned. There'll be a full debrief in time. But, you know, again, insisting that they pushed things as far as they could in terms of spending, that there were challenges in terms of, you know, it's all very well people talking about we should have spent more money. I don't think that was possible within profit and sustainability rules. We should have signed more experienced players. Well, then Mark Ashton sort of says you'd be surprised how difficult it is to attract established Premier League players to a club that's been away for 22 years, and that, you know, they want certain things in contracts which are difficult to do without putting the club in longer term jeopardy. And just reiterating that, you know, as difficult as this season's been, the club's in a good place. Category One Academy very close to being signed off, which is good news. Building work started at Playford Road on the new training ground. Saw a few diggers up there when Alex and I went yesterday for the pre-match press conference. So it's easy to forget about all the good stuff that's going on behind the scenes amidst the sort of, you know, the disappointment of the way this season, certainly the second half of this season, has kind of just petered out a little bit of late, hasn't it? But a timely reminder of where the club is at from where it's been, I think.
Yeah, very much so, and always good stuff. AJ, any sort of highlights from you from what you've read from Stu's pieces?
It's got to be the Liam Delap talk, hasn't it? Let's be honest, because the amount of times that we've been asked, can you find out, or at least ask the question about Liam Delap and what his future is and potential buybacks with Manchester City. Stu at least got to go and ask that question as a good and reasonable and understandable answer to that as well. Not one that immediately is going to clear up his future, let's be honest, but it's never going to be that. We will have to kind of wait and see what happens with him. But having that kind of open dialogue about such an important topic, one that fans have asked about for so long, has obviously been a big one. And yeah, I think everything else that kind of comes with it, with the academy stuff and training ground and getting to talk about that, even if it's just kind of like updates on where we are with it, always provides a bit of perspective, doesn't it? Where you can, and I'm sure we can as well, where we're focused so much on the day-to-day of Ipswich Town, and fans are as well, and you're looking at this next game and you're reflecting on the last few games and you're thinking about the table and what the future looks like, if that's going to be back in the Championship and things like that. And just being able to have that reminder of, actually, you know what, things are going in a really good direction with the academy, with the training ground, with all of these different things, I think is a really big positive. It just kind of brings you back down to earth, gives a bit of perspective. And it's a timely reminder, I think, of where this club is, even if the on-the-pitch stuff is, at least for now, hitting a little bit of a tough patch. The most important thing is the long term. And I think that, yeah, Stu's chat with Mark Ashton has definitely kind of underlined that.
Yeah, check out all the great stuff what Stu did with that. And sort of links, really, Stu, on the account being dropped as well, because the last season's, obviously, this covers the Blues, you know, Championship promotion to the Premier League. And they dropped. So, outline everything, my friend, that you can.
I will try my best, because as we always tell people, we are not finance journalists. First and foremost, we talk about 22 men kicking a bag of air around a football pitch. So, we'll try and interpret them, or we'll just give the facts really as best as possible. As you say, this is the period that really covers the Championship promotion season. And it outlines a couple of things, really, that turnover is increasing rapidly at this football club. Mark Ashton, bit of a master when it comes to kind of sweating the assets and bringing more money in. And that's shown by a 71% increase in turnover, which is, you know, retail, commercial, ticket income, all that sort of stuff. But with it comes a rise in losses as well, of course, which is, primarily those losses have come through a dramatic increase in wage bill. Obviously, players, you know, from League One to the Championship, you would imagine most player wages have, most player contracts have clauses in them that sees contracts doubled. So that's jumped to double check. That was, I think it was to 44.5 million from just under 20 the previous year. So that gives you an idea, if they've doubled from League One to the Championship, you'd imagine it's at least doubled again to the Premier League, more so, you would imagine. So, the higher you go, the more income, more money going out. But the most important thing, of course, is you know, financial fair play, profit and sustainability. You don't have to be as transparent as Ipswich are on your accounts, but there's always sort of additional notes when Ipswich released these, and you know, they've outlined their position on that. The paragraph is, it's noted that the average 3-year loss is 11.6 million and totals 34.9 million over the period. The club therefore had headroom of 4.1 million, 11%. So, you know, Mark Ashton has consistently always talked about being well aware of the wriggle room that they have within the financial rules, that they would, you know, the quote is always, we'll be bold and we'll be brave and we'll push things, but we, you know, we won't be reckless as well. So they're pushing things as far as they can within profit and sustainability. There's also a little marker of what they've done in terms of Premier League spending. These accounts obviously go till the end of June last year, so they just captured the Amari Hutchinson transfer, which happened on June the 30th, but it also outlines that 89 million post Amari Hutchinson has been spent on transfers as well. So that's the obviously last summer's transfer window, including Delap, Greaves, O'Shea, etc., etc. Doesn't include January with Amari Hutchinson. So I think all things considered, I think we can pretty much work out now that certainly the spend on players has been in excess of £130 million in preparation for the Premier League, which we had a pretty good idea, but that has now been spelt out. But yeah, it shows that, you know, Ipswich are ambitious, but it's also being done on solid footings, I would say.
Yeah, which I think O1's, you know, probably really happy about. And yeah, it shows obviously the huge commitment by the owners. And yeah, AJ, your thoughts on this? I'll say, we're not financial journalists, but yeah, it's always interesting reading.
Yeah, I mean, you throw the numbers at me and it's going to take a little bit of explaining. I remember when we had the fresh investment story over the summer, and I think Mark had a good idea of what was going on, and it probably took him about 15 minutes on a phone call to break it down to me as to what was going on, which is about the level that I'm at. But it all points in a positive direction, and yeah, I think it kind of links back as well. I spoke to Kieran Maguire about this after promotion, football finance expert, did a really nice podcast with him, might still be got relevant, so go back and have a listen to that one. And he kind of outlined the different approaches you can have. You can have a more cautious approach to it. Look at a Luton who maybe didn't spend quite as much, where you know you're going to have a lot of protection and there'll be more wiggle room, and they're obviously planning a new stadium as well, things like that. So you've got the funds available to you there to do something like that, but then you probably not going to have the squad quality and depth. You can go down the polar opposite to that and do a Forest. And Forest spend, I think, is still the highest of any promoted team in Premier League history when they first came up. And they've kind of been pretty sustainable in how they've done that, with piling in loads and loads of cash to that. They've had FFP points deductions. They've had all sorts of kind of repercussions from the Premier League to go with that through their overspending. Ultimately, though, they're in a position now where they're challenging for the Champions League, and you can probably say that it's paid off despite the repercussions. And Ipswich have kind of gone down the middle with that, which I think in the short term, well, as we've said, is it going to pay off? Probably not this season, but I think it absolutely is the right way of approaching things in the long term. This idea that Mark Ashton has of being, as we say, bold and brave, but not reckless in the transfer market. They've done, I think, better and spent more than most of us expected them to be honest, I'd say, over the last couple of windows as well. So looking at all that, I think you've got to be quite happy with it. And the fact now that we come out of that with a pretty positive looking financial report as well, with the extra wiggle room, with signs that there's a lot to work with down the line, I think everyone can be pretty happy.
I think people always underestimate wages in football. We all get caught up in transfer fees, and Ipswich have spent £100 million plus in transfer fees. But just to reiterate, the wage costs in the Championship were £44.5 million. Let's say they've doubled at least. You're approaching £100 million in wages. So you forget about that sort of figure, and that's money that you're committed to. That's not the one-off transfer fee that obviously you spread over a period of time, but wages you have to be very careful with. And that's where promotion and relegation clauses come in. I've talked about you get the bonuses and the rises if you go up. Ipswich need to be very well protected, you know, if they drop back down, which, you know, there was always a strong chance of. So the way Mark Ashton talks about, you know, we're very comfortable in terms of being very, very well protected in terms of the clauses in the players' contracts, both in terms of, you know, whether it's buyout clauses or whether it's in terms of kind of 50% pay cuts in players' contracts and things like that. I think Ipswich will have had a very hard line in the sand last summer when it came to, you know, yes, they might have wanted some more experienced Premier League players, but if that, if said player said, you know, I'm not willing to accept a relegation clause, I think the club will have been firm enough to have said, no, we can't do that because it's, you know, we can't take that risk, because then it's a bit of a roll of the dice. You're gambling on staying up then. And this is not an ownership. This is not a chairman that's willing to kind of risk the long-term jeopardy of the club. So I think that's something to be proud of. Ipswich have got some assets now, haven't they? When you're mentioning three under 21, England under 21s, et cetera, so, yeah. Bigger picture chat. I know it's not always exciting. I know it frustrates. I get that we can't always be looking back. But yeah, there wasn't too much teeth gnashing last summer in terms of how much Ipswich was spending, the profile of players they were signing. It's not quite worked out. But yeah, I still think things are in a pretty healthy place.
Yeah, very much so. And obviously, they make a lot of money on the shirt sales and ticket sales and all that sort of stuff as well, which is obviously a really good income for the club. And yeah, we'll see what the future is in store for town. And obviously, that is Bournemouth up next, because we head down to the South Coast, taking on a Bournemouth side who are actually not in good form. Well, I didn't actually know they were actually doing that badly. Obviously, they're still doing good. They're 10th in the Premier League and they're getting close to their record points total. And they could still be in a chance for... go, you know, sack what? Champions League football, because I think they're only 5 points away from fourth. But yeah, your overall thoughts on this, boys? Bournemouth 10th in the league, obviously still not got over, really, have we? That Bournemouth late drama against them, you know, two late goals, which was just, yeah, story of the season. But Stu, how are you feeling for this one?
Yeah, should we start with the reverse fixture back in early December? One of many gut punches for Ipswich Town this season. It looks like that first home Premier League win in more than 22 years was going to happen that day. Connor Chaplin scored in the 21st minute, I think it was, in that game. Had chances to make it 2-0. It was a really, I seem to remember it being a really, really good game, really intense end-to-end action. Tavernier hit the post for them. They certainly had chances, but Ipswich had chances too. Goal chalked off for a Delap sort of block on the goalkeeper. Was it Burgess who put the ball in the net ultimately, who was an absolute man mountain, immense that day? Cameron Burgess. Another chance where I think it's a rebound that didn't quite fall to Delap, a Schmodic's chance. Yeah, and it's, you know, season in a nutshell, didn't take the chances, didn't get the killer second. And then the subs made the difference for Bournemouth, didn't they? And you looked at it, I think they brought on £60 million worth of attacking talent. McKenna left his subs quite late because he felt the team was playing quite well and he wanted to wring every last drop out of them. And yeah, it's a Murić mad dash off the line that leads to the equaliser. And then all of a sudden, nerves are in the air. Bournemouth smelt blood and they went and got a 95th minute winner. So add it to the very long list of days where, you know, could and should have got more, but ended up with nothing to show.
Yeah, AJ, is that still a sore one when you look back? And that will be one, I'm sure, a game we'll look at and go, oh, that was a moment where Town were playing well, but obviously lost in the end.
Yeah, possibly the... maybe the third kind of sliding doors moment of the season. I'd say it would maybe be one of the more painful ones, given that the first two that would come to my mind would be the Everton one and everything that happened with that. And then you could maybe, well, you could look at Brentford and Leicester, couldn't you, realistically? But with this one, it was just the fact it was so close to getting over the line. And it was the wait beforehand, the fact that there was then at that point a lot of narrative around that first home win. And the fact that Town had quite a difficult run, a around Christmas as well, and thinking we need to start picking up some points because there's tough games coming up against Newcastle and Arsenal and then Chelsea. They obviously won that one, but the feeling after that was a huge opportunity missed to start to kind of get some points on the board before you get to those games that don't feel quite as winnable. So yeah, that felt like a big moment, and I'm sure we'll look back at quite a few big moments this season. Some of the ones I've just mentioned and a few that have happened more recently as well. And it's one of those that, again, I still don't really know how it happened as well, because they were so in control. It didn't even feel, at least from memory, that Bournemouth had really started turning the screw that much in the latter stages. Obviously, they bring the quality on, as you mentioned, and I guess the goalkeeper error opens everything up. That's the opportunity that they needed. And yeah, I thought that Town were handling that so well up until the end in that game. So to end up losing it was, absolutely a sore one, to say the least. And a little bit of revenge would be quite nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and obviously that was part of Bournemouth's run, though. I think they went on an 11-game unbeaten run, which is the record in the Premier League for Bournemouth. And obviously they were doing really well, but obviously they had now one win in the last six league games. Obviously they lost against Man City in the FA Cup on Sunday, so they may have a bit of a hangover from that. But yes, Stu, that Bournemouth have got play, you know, really good team, and obviously the manager has done a really good job there. And obviously we were Championship equals back in the day. Obviously, Bournemouth got up to the Premier League, and obviously we were sort of sliding down the leagues. But their team got a new training ground as well, and have a Premier League state-of-the-art training ground. So Bournemouth are, you know, a team maybe we can look at and go, oh, we can build on that as well.
Yeah, I guess they're an example of many examples this year of kind of those mid-table Premier League clubs that have just got themselves established over a period of time and built squads over multiple transfer windows. Talking about Ipswich spending 100 million plus in one window, Bournemouth, Fulham, Brighton, etc. have been spending tens and billions of pounds window after window after window, and that gives you the squad depth, and the squad depth was the difference in that reverse game at Portman Road. They've had some incredible days this season. They beat Arsenal, they beat Man City, they beat Spurs in the early stages of the season. They've had some really impressive performances. If there's one little bit of hope, is that their squad depth isn't quite so strong going into this match. We talked about the subs making a difference. Enes Unal, who came on and scored at Portman Road, he's out with an injury. Evan Nilsson has only just come back from injury himself, who's kind of their only really fit striker. They had to sort of repurpose Uatara as a front man for a period recently. Tavernier is a bit of a doubt going into this one. And then I guess the fact that they played Man City on Sunday could be seen as a positive or a negative from an Ipswich point of view. My feeling was it might be a boost for them. It might help them sort of blow off the cobwebs, and Ipswich were going to look a little bit more rusty going into this one. But as Alex has pointed out, Bournemouth are a super intense football team. Their options have diminished, and they did look tired in that second half against City. And the manager, Iriola, kind of conceded that himself, that they, you know, I don't think they had a shot on goal for the entirety of the second half, and they ran out of steam a little bit. David Brooks, for example, was someone, you know, missed 18 months of football with his cancer battle. You know, he's not played a huge amount. He's suddenly being asked to start on the right, and isn't someone that certainly finishes 90-minute football matches. So could be an opportunity here for Ipswich.
They've still got some good players, though, AJ. They've still got some good players. And I have to admit, I do have some of them in my FPL team, and I have to debate if they're going to come out or not. We've got Clivert, got Kirkez, who was suspended, and Housen as well was suspended for the Man City game because of yellow cards and stuff. But they're going to be back in this. Semenyo, good player. Well, you can name all there. They've got some good players all over the pitch. Obviously, got Kepa in goal, which, you know, he's had his moments at Chelsea, but obviously he's had a really good season. But yeah, it could be a good time to play them, but they've still got some good players.
Yeah, that Kepa penalty save. I know he made a mistake on Sunday, for I think it was for the second goal, but he made a brilliant penalty save in that one. And I think they'll be boosted by the return of the players. Hoisten's been one of their stars so far this season, linked with a £50 million move to Real Madrid. He came in funnily enough, he was signed with no fanfare. I think he played once for Juventus, full stop, had a few loan appearances with Roma, and he only came in due to an injury to Senesi around December. It was, I think, maybe a week or so. It might have been the game before they played Town. He made his debut. I think he scored against Tottenham on his debut. It was exceptional. Hasn't looked back since. Unbelievable player and now a Spanish international. Kerkez linked with Liverpool. You're looking at two players who are probably worth around the £100 million mark combined, which is really impressive given what Bournemouth has spent, not very much. Kluivert's been exceptional since he's come in. He scored, I think, a couple of hat-tricks. One of them was a hat-trick of penalties. Antoine Semenyo, I loved watching in the Championship with Bristol City, and it took him a little bit of time to hit these kind of really high levels with Bournemouth, but he's exceptional. Evan Nilsson was the replacement for Dominic Solanke, wasn't it, who got sold to Tottenham for about £60 million. And although he's had that injury, you can feel that it's not a big difference between the two of them, to be perfectly honest. I've been really impressed by him. Real quality there. And I know that it's not as good on the bench. They are missing players. I think that Luis Sinisterra, for example, is another one who we've seen up close before. We know what his quality is, and he's out injured as well. I think it was his hamstring, re-injured it before the international break. But you still look at Ouattara, who's fit and available. You look at Alex Scott, someone that I really like. He's an exceptional young talent. Dan Cheberson hasn't had the success out on loan, but looks better back at Bournemouth. They've been having a few more youngsters on the bench in recent weeks. They're definitely, the squad isn't as thin. And I think that if Town can keep things tight going towards the latter stages, that's then where potentially Ipswich actually have a bit more attacking quality on the bench, I would say. Might be a little bit of a flip just because of where the injuries are at the moment. But this is still a strong Bournemouth team, regardless of the form. And I think one of the big things also to point out, in terms of following where they are as a club, they posted some of their new photos and videos of their new training ground. And my word, it is unbelievable what they've done. And you think about, I think there's this perception of Bournemouth, it's little old Bournemouth still, because it's a small football club and a small stadium, but that training ground shows their ambition, and they're definitely heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and did you go to Bournemouth Uni, Stu? Am I getting out mixed up with somebody else? Yeah,
going
back to your roots. Obviously, you've not got no connection to Bournemouth Football Club, but yeah, you know, that's where
I was at Bournemouth, sort of in the mid early to mid 2000s. That's where I did my journalism degree, and that was at a time when Bournemouth were in danger of going out of business. You know, I remember going to games, doing work experience, covering matches there when they had people like James Hayter and the big striker they had, proper big man, little man Fletcher. They've got I don't know if the stand's still named after him. They were shaking buckets outside the ground to, you know, basically try and save the club. So what a journey they've been on. Obviously some big injections of cash along the way. But it's a reminder, as you say, of the training ground that they've just opened, of kind of the work that Ipswich have got to do from an infrastructure point of view. Them, Bright and others are miles ahead in terms of kind of European and further afield scouting, data models, all that sort of stuff. So, they're a club that's in a really good place and dreaming of Champions League football. And now FA Cup, you know, is out the way. There'll be full focus on that.
Okay, then. Well, let's talk about Ipswich Town. 17 days, as we said, since the last game against Nottingham Forest. Obviously, that was a disappointing day, a 4-2 defeat. Obviously, it was still a good day at the end because Cowway Live 2, which was a success at the Barton Ipswich. Thanks, everyone, for joining us for that. If you did go, if you didn't, obviously, it's available to listen and to watch. Stu, you spoke to Kieran McKenna for the press conference. Injuries and all that jazz. What was said?
Injuries, yeah. Just when you think things are starting to clear up, there's always something around the corner for Ipswich Town. Poor old Calvin Phillips. His stop-start season continues. It's been revealed that he suffered a nasty gash to his foot in the Nottingham Forest game. He came off quite late in that match. I don't think anyone really clocked that it was a bad injury or anything like that. But he's obviously been caught by a stud, and it's a cut that's needed 20 plus stitches. He's obviously had a little bit of time for that to heal. But he's one of several doubts. They're going to have to make some judgment calls going into this game as to whether certain players are ready for Bournemouth or whether they hold them back for Wolves at home on Saturday. Connor Chaplin will be one of those. Hasn't played at all this calendar year. His last game was at Newcastle. Big home defeat back end of December. A knee injury. Week after week, we heard he's close, and he keeps having setbacks, and he's had to change his recovery approach a few times. But I think he's one that's benefited from this little break and has been training and is in contention. So is it fate that he scored in the reverse fixture against Bournemouth and he comes back in for this one? I think he's someone that Ipswich have certainly missed. One or two apparently have come back from international duty with some issues. They weren't revealed, but we'll have to see on that front. Axel Tuanzebe had that hamstring injury at Forest, didn't he? Another hamstring injury at Forest again. Took the opportunity to have some more surgery on his thumb. I think it sounds like he's a bit of a 50-50 for this game. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of team Kieran McKenna can call upon for this.
Okay. AJ, got insight on those potential injuries? International break, did you see any players limp off or anything like that?
No. It all looked okay for England. I think it all looked okay for Paraguay. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. And there is going to be a fine balance with that as well. I know that they have had an extra break and, you know, there are players that would have come back and had a weekend off, gone into training this week. But you still got to factor in that there's half the squad that have stayed at Portman Road. They played an internal game at Portman Road, which was just one set of the squad against the other with a few under-21s there as well. And then you've got others like Mtiso, who less than a week ago was on the other side of the world starting and playing 90 minutes and scoring a screamer in a World Cup qualifier, and others who've made long journeys. Cameron Burgess, another one. And I know that it has been a week, and they've only played a couple of games, but that always has to be a factor as well. Coming into two games in quite quick succession and thinking ahead about, you can't ignore that Chelsea and Arsenal are on the horizon as well. Managing minutes might be something that Kieran McKenna needs to look at.
Yeah, because a quick turnaround. Obviously, we've got the Wolves game is going to be big, but Wednesday, Saturday, it's not, you know, and obviously Bournemouth's not too far to travel, but they're still going to have that Thursday to sort of recover and then train Friday, and they've got the game Saturday. But yeah, it's a quick turnaround too.
Yeah, he's going to have to use the squad over the course of these two matches. Wolves will have had an extra day's recovery going into that game on Saturday, which I think is not to be underestimated with them playing West Ham tonight. So you almost need to sort of plan for both matches, really. Have a bit half an eye on the weekend as well. But equally, you know, they need to get, really, we keep saying this game after game, we need to get something tomorrow night to, you know, at least give a bit of an edge on Saturday's game. Because, you know, the reality is if Wolves win or get something tonight and Ipswich lose tomorrow, then it's bit of a damp squib sort of territory, potentially going into what we were hoping was going to be the big one. So only Kieran McKenna and his staff will know the sort of the real sort of fitness situation of some of these players, and they'll have to make the right calls.
Yeah, we shall see. Well, boys, shall we talk about predictions then? What do you reckon, AJ? You're the man who most of the time gets it right, but obviously it's hard really now to predict these sort of games. You just don't know. Off the championship, you're on the money all the time.
I was great at that. Yeah. It hasn't really gone as well this year. I feel like with the championship, I was always like, just go in with positivity. And I always thought it was a bit of a risk doing that. But I thought, you know what, I'll just go in and predict that they'll win, not thinking they were going to win about three quarters of their games and secure automatic promotion. This year, you go in with a similar approach and you're going to pay the price, unfortunately. But I can't just come on the podcast every week and predict them to lose. And I'm not going to do it this week either. I'm going to come out and I did my little block of predictions. You can still go read that as well. And within that, I predicted a draw in this one, partially looking at the fixture that Bournemouth have just had against Manchester City, a really big one in their history. How are they going to feel after that? Probably quite deflated, looking at the squad depth, looking at how they kind of run themselves into the ground for 60 minutes and then they like to be able to shuffle the pack. They're not going to really be able to do that in the same way, although they still do have that quality to bring on. And I just feel that with the extra rest and hopefully a bit of a refreshed mindset, Town can go and get something. I'm not sure I can quite put myself forward enough to predict a win, even though I think the league's kind of gone null and void. I've gone with a, I can't remember what I said. I think I said a 2-2 draw. So yeah, I'm going to stick with that. And it'll just be interesting to see who plays as well and who might have the opportunity to impact games here. I think there's one or two who possibly deserve opportunities. Now coming into the final few games as well, we have to start thinking about looking ahead and thinking about those that maybe haven't played as much in the last few weeks. Do they deserve an opportunity to come in and start having some minutes, especially with such a short turnaround? But I'm hoping that I'll be able to get this right this time, and I'll go with a draw.
Oh, so Desmond. And yeah, big thing. Obviously, Jacob Greaves took off at half-time in the last game, so maybe Cameron Burgess comes in. That's one thing we didn't actually mention quickly, Stu, there, about the potential players coming in.
Yeah, and we mentioned Burgess had his best game of the season against Bournemouth earlier in the campaign as well, so maybe that comes into the thinking as well as the kind of the way him and Greaves played in the last game against Forest. If Phillips isn't fit, then you would imagine Sam Morsy comes into the team to be that kind of deeper of the two pivot midfielders. He was the man put up for press yesterday. So read into that what you will. And then you get to the top end of the pitch and the Philogene, Hutchinson and Ciso 3 in behind didn't work against Forest, did it? It looked short of experience. It looked short of chemistry. It looked too individualistic at times, everyone trying to sort of beat their own man. So does he mix that up? Again, Connor Chaplin from the start, I would think is very unlikely, although we have been caught out by that before. It was someone who'd been out for ages and took us completely
by surprise. We had one last year. We had the, was it Kiefer Moore and was there someone else who'd come back? I think it was the Hull game.
Hurst one.
Oh, yeah, that was it. It was George Hurst who came back in for that Hull City game. We kind of thought he'd missed most of the end of the season. He came back. I think there might have been another one who came back in that game who wasn't expected to as well. So, McKenna has previous four. At Norwich away, another one where we didn't think Kiefer Moore was going to start in that one, and he did. So, we've had the surprises in the past.
So I don't know how what that sort of reshuffle looks like at the top end of the pitch. We've talked about maybe a lot about redeploying Liam Delap, maybe playing him wide right so that George Hurst can get in, or people have talked about playing Delap slightly off the striker just to mix things up. And then you've got people like Jack Clark, Nathan Broadhead, others. Yeah, that'll be very interesting. I think Bournemouth's strengths will play a big part in the team that McKenna selects. He talks about them being, as we've mentioned already, really intense, really aggressive off the ball. They win the ball in the opposition's half more than any team in Europe this season is apparently the stat. And then once they win the ball, they attack at speed and they've got plenty of pace and power. So Kieran's talked about the team needing to be clever with how they use the ball and not leaving themselves too open on the transition. My feeling is I don't think there'll be loads of goals in this game. I think, you know, I'm not necessarily thinking Bournemouth will be at their absolute best for the reasons that we've discussed. And if you look at their home record, they played 14 games and they've scored only 18 goals across those 14 games at home, but they've conceded 12. So only the top three in the division have conceded fewer home goals, but only four teams have scored fewer at home. So there's not been goals galore at the Vitality Stadium. And bearing in mind that five of those 18 goals they scored came in one game against Nottingham Forest. So that says to me that, you know, Ipswich a bit rusty, Bournemouth potentially a little bit jaded after the weekend. I'm not necessarily expecting a classic here. I can see one goal either way, if I'm honest.
Well, prediction.
And I've gone the way of Bournemouth reluctantly. Oh. I just think
boo.
I just think ultimately I think there's an opportunity there, and I'm I just don't think Ipswich are quite in the right spot to take advantage of that at the moment. The chemistry, the patterns of play, all that sort of stuff. We've discussed it post Forest. It wasn't quite there. Will the break rejuvenate them? I hope so. But yeah, I've got Bournemouth just to edge this one, reluctantly.
Can I throw in a couple of selection curveballs into this one? Mm-hmm. Because you've got to think about, as you've said, games coming up and as well trying to do things maybe a little bit differently. I think the back line for me would stay the same apart from the Burgess-Greaves swap that we discussed. Midfield, a little bit of an interesting one here. If you're going to have Morsy started with Jack Taylor in the reverse game. I thought Jack Taylor was really, really good.
Mm.
And you've got to think about Jens Kajusta a little bit, I think, and the prospect of him playing two games in quite quick succession, possibly having him off the bench as well. If you're looking at a game that could be tight, that you need to turn, if you wanted to then take off a Jack Taylor or a Sam Morsy towards the latter stages, being able to bring on someone with his on-ball quality, I think would be quite interesting. And then knowing that you've done everything you can to protect him going into that Wolves game where you're going to want him to start. And then the front line, for me, another player that I want to see get some more starts. It makes things just a little bit more flexible in terms of the system. And I'm a little bit cagey about the idea of playing a back five at Bournemouth where it's such a tight pitch. But the idea of Ben Johnson on the right, a natural right-sider who wants to get forward, then you can switch and you can play that back five when you're out of possession. There will be times where Town will need to have a lot of time out of possession and need to be really strong because of the intensity that Bournemouth play with. So having him there, I think, and yeah, as a natural right-sider would be really, really good. I mentioned on the live show about George Hurst starting this one, and I'd say that if the game was tomorrow, I'd start George Hurst. In hindsight, not too sure. And I think one of the things that could help in this one, if you have Johnson on the right, is having Amari Hutchinson and Jaden Philogene. And there, you've got three players who, yeah, they're all away on the international break, playing for England under-21s, but they were playing together. They've trained together. They've played with each other, both at Ipswich and away. They've had that experience of doing it. They've all scored in the last couple of weeks on international duty. We're talking about a lack of chemistry here that we saw against Nottingham Forest. Does having these guys who've all played together, they were all on the pitch together briefly, does that maybe give you that license to have a bit more security, a bit more knowledge of where they're going to be? So those are the little bits that stand out to me. Johnson definitely would be one that, as I said, deserves more minutes. And then just having that kind of chemistry with those three England under-21 internationals who all impressed recently, I think that could work quite well.
I like the Ben Johnson shout. I mean, Bournemouth have got real strength down the left in Semenyo and Kirkez. So I think that would be quite prudent and quite flexible, as you say. John, I actually think he didn't get off to the best of starts, Ben Johnson, but whenever he's played, I think he's been pretty solid. He's been pretty reliable. And from an attacking sense, we've seen some great switches of play. He's got the athleticism. We keep talking about the lack of Premier League experience. He is someone that has played a decent amount at this level. So I like that. And it's interesting that would mean then Jaden Philogene playing on the left. And I actually asked Kieran McKenna about that at the press conference yesterday, because if you see Jaden's goal against Portugal, I think, for the under-21s last Monday, it's a little dart inside off the left. And he's played the majority of his football on the left-hand side. It's a fair mix. He's played left and right for whole last season, but mostly on the left. And I think Kieran McKenna sees him long-term as a left-sider. I think, obviously, they tried to get him first last summer, didn't get him, and then went and got Jack Clark as a left-sided option. And then he comes into Ipswich and makes his full debut on the left at Liverpool, and Wes Burns goes off in that game, season ending injury. And on top of Chio Ogbene being out, it's kind of meant needs must with Jaden playing on the right-hand side. It's, so that would be interesting. Gets Jaden Philogene into more of a kind of square peg and square hole. Gets Ben Johnson on the pitch to deal with some Bournemouth threats. I like that as a shout. To row back on the midfield shout, you're right. I think there needs to be a Jens Kajusta maybe starting two games in 4 days, maybe unlikely. Jack Taylor played well against Bournemouth. He also got the last-minute winner against Wolves in the reverse fixture as well. So it depends which of those two you think is best suited for those two games. But I can certainly see one starting one and one the other for sure.
Okay, then we shall see what Kieran McKenna does. So we've gone for a draw and a defeat so far in predictions. So it's now up to me to go with maybe a win, draw, or defeat. You know what? We've got to win games. So come on, boys. Town to win. 1-0. Late winner. Lindelap. Boom. Goal. 3 points. But it won't what matter because Wolves will probably win against West Ham. No. 1-0. Just 1-0. Lindelap. Late winner.
Like it.
So obviously not great for our deadlines, but it'll still be fun, won't it? Because we've won a game. But
I'll take it. If it ruins our deadlines and Town win a game, then I'll take it.
Yeah, but obviously,
she's sighing there.
No, I was going to say F the deadlines. I don't think anyone listening gives a jot about that. Give me an Ipswich Town win, please. Give us something to hang on to for the remainder of this season.
Basically, but West Ham, please do us a favour. You Hammers, you know, please tell your, you know, your girlfriend Sophie, Alex, like, you know, let them lose the game, you know. No, win the game.
Don't lose the game, Ross.
Don't lose the game, bloody hell. What am I doing there? But
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how I feel, having watched obviously a fair bit. I've not seen a single West Ham game live apart from the one I've covered with Ipswich this season. With that, I'm not really sure how I feel, to be perfectly honest, because having watched quite a bit of West Ham, they seem to show up against kind of top teams. They've won at Arsenal quite recently, but when they're playing teams towards the bottom, they're not losing that many. But there's a lot of kind of draws. I'm not really sure what that would be in terms of result for Ipswich. Not great. Any points that Wolves pick up are not great. But not feeling overly brilliant going into tonight. But we'll see. All that Town can do and control is their own performances and results.
Yeah, because I know a question was asked, wasn't it, Stu, to Kim McKenna, will you watch the Wolves game? And he said no, but I bet there will be a little eye on it just to see, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think I can't remember the exact response. I think it was probably not, but knowing that Kieran McKenna is the football obsessive he is, I think he might be giving it a little watch, especially as Ipswich are playing Wolves on Saturday.
Mm.
It would make sense from just purely from a scouting perspective, but I get that the public message needs to be it's about us, it's not about anyone else. So are either of you planning to sit down and watch that later on?
No
because I'm going to be watching, whether it's live in the stadium, probably not, or most likely on my TV. I'm unfortunately going to be watching Cambridge play against Wrexham, which is not going to be enjoyable. I have this idea in my head that maybe Kieran McKenna's just like, well, you know what, I'm going to watch Morecambe Cheltenham in League Two tonight. And he just has a nice switch on of Sky Sports Plus. Probably not, but yeah, that's just my nice picture in my head of Kieran McKenna, football obsessive. He likes the pyramid as well, doesn't he? He's not the kind of person that we know that turns his nose up at watching and enjoying and relishing the lower sides of it as well, even though he's enjoyed watching some Champions League lately too.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a Man United fan, isn't he? So I'm sure he'll watch Forest Man United. You know, that's on today as well. So I don't know. I'm sure he's got multiple screens. He'll just change from League Two to Premier League to what other teams are playing. Is a National League Cup semi-finals? Yeah.
Is he going to have like this kind of CCTV room where he's got like about 15 different screens in front of him? He can monitor something at every opportunity.
It's fair. The Irish Premiership is on. So he's, you know, I don't know if he has a connection to Linfield or Lerne or Coleraine or Crusaders that they're playing. So, Cleftonville are playing as well. Obviously, Jim Magilton is the manager of them. So, yeah. The Spanish Copa del Rey, that's semi-final. Real Madrid, Sociedad.
You're just going to list all the fixtures. We'll do a classified fixtures for Tuesday.
Do you know what? There's all the cup semi-finals. The German Cup semi-final, the Coppa Italia, there's the Coppa de France as well.
The Coppa de France.
It's not right, is it? You've got the Swiss League as well. So, yeah, plenty of football action, everybody. So, but hopefully Wolves do lose against West Ham and gives us some hope. But what will be, ladies and gentlemen. But any other business, boys, as we wrap up another Coway podcast sponsored by Stardust Spirits.
to do this now, don't we? I liked that from Alex at the start.
Thank you. Yeah, I was gonna. I saw your little chuckle as I did that.
No, I thought we're gonna have to do that every time now. Yeah, I've been waiting for that moment at the end. Stardust Spirit. Still haven't tried our little tasters that were passed on to us.
Yeah. They're brilliant. They're really, really good. I've got, I think, maybe one or two left to try. But I mean, the chocolate rum, I mentioned this last week with the pollo dip with Mark, and there was some really nice bits that I've tried so far. The speculoos one is really good. The chocolate rum was one that I know got recommended after I chose it, actually. And I'm so happy I did choose it. It was really, really nice. Lemon and lime as well. Really good. So, yeah, really, really happy with those. Definitely go in and try some out. If you don't know what you want, you can go and have a little selection taster box like we've got. If you know exactly what you want, they've got the big bottles there as well. We have the discount code linked with us. There's just so much to choose from, whether it's for you or someone else. Such a big variety. So go check it out.
Yeah, KOA, use the code. Get 20% off your next order. Stu, anything from you? Are we traveling together or... I know we're staying over that.
Should we do travel admin outside of the pod? Yeah, we need to discuss this, don't we? I believe Alex is getting the train, and we need to work out how I'm going to get you in our little in the Honda Jazz. But we'll figure that out in a minute.
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, I just thought bring the listeners involved, let them know how we're getting down there. But if you're going to the game, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy. If not, follow the coverage with us. We'll be there as standard. And I hope you've enjoyed another Kings of Anglia podcast. If you want to check out more stuff we do, I've got some latest KOA pod specials that are available. Jason DeVos, the Canadian brute, the captain back in the day. Really good chat with him. Obviously, he's back in Canada and doing some good stuff. He's actually starting business school. So he stopped sort of coaching. He's doing some business school. So I'm looking forward to seeing his new chat there. But a really good chat with him. And also a chat with an 80s player, Mark Brennan, who was a sort of midfield player back in the day, really good player, but
Wonder kid,
before Jason Dazelle broke the record, he was the one who scored in the same game, and then Jason Dazelle, obviously 16-year-old, went and scored. So but yeah, really good chat with Mark, and sadly he's been diagnosed with MCI, which is like dementia, early onset dementia basically, but really good chat with him, and we've got a great story going out with him soon as well to sort of discuss all that. And yeah, really good chat though with him and Jason DeVos. KOA pod specials that are available. And yeah, as standard, follow us on all our socials, Kings of Anglia. And we'll be back for another podcast very soon. But bring on the cherries as we head down there. So hopefully, win a football match. We shall see. Hey, Jay, Stu, thanks for joining me. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Goodbye for now.